Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. I've been wanting to have a chat with today's guest for quite some time. I find his story interesting, inspiring, and empowering as someone who has achieved a lot of success, but also became self-actualized along his journey. The gentleman I'm talking about is Michael Bent. Michael is one of the most highly decorated amateur boxers in U.S. history, and in 1993 defeated Tommy Morrison with a first-round knockout to win the WBO Heavyweight Boxing Championship. He also survived an abusive father, a suicidal experience, and 4 days in a coma with swelling on his brain after his last fight. Post-boxing, Michael tapped into his creative side and began writing, directing, and acting in such movies as Ali, Public Enemies, numerous television shows, theater, and was featured in the Netflix series Losers. There is so much to unwrap here. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Thank you a lot, man.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, you're one of my favorite people, and I'm just starting to get to know you. Yeah, yeah. I really applaud your honesty and vulnerability that you shared on the Netflix series Losers. It was very inspiring to me, and I'm sure a lot of other people who watched it, especially men. And, you know, right. And I think that that's really important now as men are learning how to open up more, and we need other strong men to give them permission to do the same.
That's right.
Was that hard to do for you to share your past like that?
No, not at all. When I had the opportunity to be involved with this, with the Netflix docuseries, The Losers, you know, it's all about having friends and allies, man. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'd rather have like more allies than friends. You know, so the way I got involved was that with that project, a young lady, well, not young lady, a lady by the name of Laura Drexel of the Drexel family in Philadelphia, Drexel University.
Oh, wow.
You know, she and I were friends. And she calls me one day and says, Michael, how are you about doing or participating in a Ken Burns documentary about Muhammad Ali? I'm like, shit. Like, how am I? I'm interested.
Yes, and please. So,
yeah. About a day or two later, I get a call from Ken Burns' son-in-law, David McMahon. David is married to Ken Burns' daughter, Sarah Burns. And so David and I spoke, and they flew me out to New York to chat with them and watch footage of Muhammad as a boxer, and like, you know, and speak about his stances in the social sector. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just let me riff, man. And I've never had that kind of experience before. You know, just like, you know, call what I see unapologetically. And they gave me free rein. And so that's how I got, like, you know, attached to that thing. And that thing has, like, you know, given me like a second or third life, because, you know, it's really fascinating material, man.
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah. I find it so hard to believe that, you know, you kind of went into boxing begrudgingly, you know, due to your father, and that you went as far as you did. I mean, all the way to the top without possibly truly loving it or wanting to do it. I mean, talk to me about that.
Okay, that's interesting you mentioned that. You know, being 55 years old, being 56 years old, whatever I am or whatnot, like, you know, I've come to the conclusion that, you know, if I have a passion for something, don't force it on me. You know, don't live vicariously through me. But like, you know, as a 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 7-year-old, 5-year-old, like, you know, your father, like, is driving this down your throat. And although, like, you know, I was totally, you know, I was in line with that because, like, you know, he's my father. He owns the house. He owns blah, blah, blah. He like, you know, so like, you know, he was in control. But once I got outside of myself, I'm like, you know, once I started traveling as a member of the USA boxing team, and I'm traveling to Russia, to Sweden, to, you know, Germany, I'm like, my man, like, this is a friggin' education. And, you know, my father, like, you know, never realized that, but I realized it. So, you know, my point is this, just because you don't like something, it doesn't mean you can't find value in something. Yeah, in that something, you know, and that's what sparked me, man. Because, like, you know, once again, like, you know, I never wanted to box. Like, I, you know, Muhammad Ali was my hero growing up. There was Muhammad Ali and a baseball player named Chris Chambliss.
Yeah,
and, and, like, there we go. And those were my two favorite human beings of all time, bro. And, like, you know, and but, like, you know, as a boxer, like, you know, you had to have someone, like, you had to have a model. And my model was Muhammad. And my father, like, you know, he was a big Muhammad Ali fan, but, like, you know, he wouldn't call him by, he would, when he would talk about Muhammad Ali, he would call him Cassius Clay. And, like, you know, you know, into my teens, when I got, you know, when I got kind of conscious, I felt that was, like, disrespectful. But, like, you know, I didn't have the balls to, like, you know, check my father because, like, you know, he's my father. And at that point in my life, like, you know, I wasn't going to question him. I'll say, like, you know, why do you think you call this man Muhammad Ali, I mean, Cassius Clay, when his name is Muhammad Ali? But, like, you know, that's a whole other conversation, man. But but, like, you know, so when I you know, got to the point where I saw how travel, how being an athlete can, like, you know, change the trajectory of, like, you know, one's life, I'm like, my man, like, you know, I'm all for it. You know, once again, like, you know, travel, I'm a high school dropout. I dropped out in high school, and I went to Ravenwood High School in New York, Aviation High School, which at that time was one of the top, like, you know, high schools in the state. And I dropped out when I made the USA boxing team. And so I go home to my father and say, like, you know, I just dropped out of school. And he said, great. Well, he didn't say great. Like, he didn't say great. You know, that's an exaggeration. Like, you know, he was okay with it because I was a member of the USA boxing team. And, like, you know, my school was conflicting with my traveling with the USA boxing team. So he was like, you know, he was like, okay, great, do it. Like, you know, do what you gotta do on the boxing side, man.
So in some ways, like, boxing kind of gave you a little bit of separation and freedom from him also, correct?
I mean, yes, that's the. I think that's why I was so successful, subconsciously as an amateur fighter. You know, because, like, you know, the more you win, the more you're on the road. And I didn't want to be in the fucking house with this goddamn guy. I despised him, and I knew he despised me. You know, but, like, you know, like, you know, that being, like, you know, what it was, like, you know. I, you know, being 56 years old, I get where my father's stuff came from. And, like, you know, my responsibility is to myself and to my son. And, like, you know, I made a vow, like, you know, when my son was born, like, you know, not to be the kind of father that my father was. Period. You know.
Wow. Boy, no, that's just fascinating. I mean,
I mean, it's painful stuff, like, but, like, you know, like, you know, we have to, like, you know, we have to, like, you know, have the courage and empathy for ourselves and for others in order to, like, you know, get to that second rung on the ladder, man. You know, if not, like, you know, I'm gonna be honest with you, Brian, like, you know, if not for, like, you know, I have a lot of mentors in my life, a lot of allies in my life, right? Chief among them, like, you know, Bert Sugar, prolific, like, you know, journalist of boxing back in the 60s, 70s, 80s and whatnot, man. He hired me for a job as a writer for one of his magazines, his last magazine, as a matter of fact. And like, you know, to have somebody of that stature put their stamp on you, you know, to legitimize you, that was heavy for me.
Oh, okay. It would have been heavy for anybody.
There we are. You know, that's like, you know, Ilya Kazan, like, you know, putting the stamp on you, like, you know, if you're an actor.
Yeah.
You know, for me, like, you know, when Bert Sugar, like, you know, said, hey, you're a wonderful writer, man, like, you know, write my magazine, that was him putting his stamp on me. Like, I'm like, holy shit. Yeah. So, like, you know, it was allies, man, like, you know, that gave me things that my father couldn't.
And I'm sure that just probably continued to help you fuel you kind of maybe outside of some of the stuff that lingers when one goes through traumatic experiences like
that. That's right. And the more I began to hang around people like, you know, Bert Sugar, like, I had this wonderful boxing sponsor as an amateur. Mm-hmm. His name was Shelley Finkel.
I've heard of that name.
Well, he's a biggie in the boxing world. But like, you know, back then, I mean, Shelley was always a biggie. You know, he came from the music world and blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, I got introduced to him by a dear friend of mine whose name is Mark Breland. And Mark is like, you know, one of the great, Mark, in my estimation, is the greatest amateur boxer in the history of this country. Mm. Period. And look, you know, so Mark was sponsored by Shelley Finkel, and Shelley Finkel and Mark introduced me to Shelley, and you know, we just clicked. And I think, like, you know, well, no, I know that my father, like, you know, he felt threatened by that. Mm. You know, so like, you know, that was my father's business. Like, you know, that's not my business. Right. Every time, like, you know, Shelley would like call me or like, you know, Shelley would send me to camp to, like, you know, so I can get educated on the craft of boxing. And, you know, I go to these camps for like, you know, 6-7 weeks, man. Like, and like, I'd come back home and my father would like, I would sense this, like, this air of resentment.
Wow.
I said, okay. All right. Like, you know, I didn't like it. I couldn't put, like, you know, I couldn't define it. I couldn't put it into words, but like, you know, I knew what it was. I know what, like, you know, resentment and, like, you know, and scorn of feels like. And that's what he was giving, because, like, you know, he was resentful that, like, you know, this guy Shelley Finkel was doing more for me than he was able to do.
Well, it was just kind of mirroring to him what he wasn't doing for you.
Bam. That's right. That's it. Yep. Yeah. You know, and now, it's just not to cut you off, but now I find it fascinating because, like, you know, as an actor, I can use that kind of, like, you know, that kind of chemistry, man. And a writer, yeah, that's where it is.
Well, absolutely. Which brings me, you know, to this point, I kind of feel like we're kindred spirits a little bit, because in addition to you being open to the self-growth process of, you know, learning how to truly step into your own skin and authentically be you. I mean, I've been working on that my whole life.
Yeah.
But, you know, but we also both kind of started exploring and expressing ourselves creatively a bit later in our lives.
Yeah.
And so I know how exciting and alive it's made me feel, you know, as I started to lift that lid off and began to step out of my comfort zone and do things I had no idea were inside of me. When did you realize that you wanted to do that? You express yourself through writing and acting.
Okay. I love that question, my man. So the spark for me that really opened the door to acceptance, to writing and acting, because like I became a writer first and an actor. Okay, so I had a boxing manager, Stan Hoffman, mm-hmm. and he was a big, like, you know, he was a biggie in the game. Stan passed away about a year ago, and he was a really, like, you know, he was a hard driver, but a really sensitive cat, and we connected, period, right? Stan, so after my last fight against Herbie Hyde, where I got knocked out in like a 96-hour coma, I got knocked out and put into a 96-hour coma. You know, I went back to America, my last fight was in London, went back to America, you know, bought a house in Pennsylvania, and would drive back and forth to New York to, like, you know, because Stan had hired me as a boxing trainer for his guys. Stan had, like, you know, a camp of guys, boxers and girls, actually.
Okay.
One day we were going to travel to Holland because Stan had a group of boxers in Holland who he wanted me to train or assistant train. So we go over there, and I didn't want to be there, honestly. You know, I love travel. Love to meet different people, be in different environments, blah blah blah. But, like, you know, I didn't want to be there at that point, because, like, you know, it was boxing, and being knocked out in my last pro fight, it was humiliating, and you feel like a loser, and, like, you know, your spirit is broken.
Yeah.
And I did not want to confront people in that industry, because I knew what they were saying about me when I left the conversation. Look at that fucking bum. He got knocked the fuck out by Tommy, by Herbie Hyde. You know, even if they never said it, that's what they're thinking subconsciously.
Yeah.
Well, so I thought or think, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so I go over there, and, you know, I'm working with these athletes, pretty good boxers, and I see Stan Hoffman. I think we have, like, maybe a break in training over the weekend, and I see Stan Hoffman, and he says, Mike, there's a English reporter who wants to have an interview with you, you know, kind of like, you know, what are they doing now kind of piece.
Okay.
Like, okay, great. I'm like, just like, you know, like, you know, where is he? So he tells me, like, you know, where he is in the hotel, blah, blah, blah. So I go, like, you know, in the, it was actually in the rec room of the hotel. So I walk into this rec room, and, you know, a lot of equipment there, like training equipment, blah, blah. And this guy is sitting down. And he says to me, hey, Michael, how you doing? I'm like, I'm good, man. What's up? What do you want to talk about? And he says to me, I'll never forget this. He says to me, okay, so you don't want to be here, do you? And I look at him. And no, I don't, man. And he says, well, what do you want to do? And I say, what you're doing? Writing, yeah. Start writing. You know what? And so, like, you know, I finished the 2 weeks or 3 weeks with the kid that I was working with in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And when I got home to my house in Pennsylvania, I made a phone call to Mike Katz. At that point, Mike Katz was retired at that point, but, like, Mike Katz used to, well, I knew Mike Katz well because he was a big time A-list writer for the New York Daily News.
Okay.
And Daily News at that point sponsored the New York Golden Gloves, which I won, like, you know, four times, blah, blah, blah. And so I asked Mike, I said, Mike, like, how you doing, man? Blah, blah, blah. And Mike was like, you know, a straight shooter. Get to the goddamn point, man. What do you want? Okay. 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 I got it. Okay. Okay. Mike, you know, I've done some writing in the past. Like, you know, I put myself back in school and I've done some writing. If I wrote a piece on, like, on a boxer, say Mark Breland, on his attempted comeback, after losing a match, you think, like, you know, you could run it in the or get it ran in the Daily News? And Mike said to me, like, you know, hey, man, check us out. If it's good, you have a chance. I'm not like, you know, giving you any promises.
Wow.
Any hunger, right? Okay. So at that point,
challenge accepted.
Yeah, no, you're goddamn right. Exactly. Right. Damn right. Yeah. So at that point, once again, like, you know, I lived in the Poconos, and my first trainer was a man named Emmanuel Stewart, who was a biggie, who's on Mount Rushmore in terms of, like, you know, his work as a boxing trainer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Emmanuel Stewart was a big, he passed away as well. So I got word that Emmanuel Stewart was working with my friend Mark Breland, not too far from me. They had, you know, had a boxing camp. So I drive up there and I say to Emmanuel, I mean, what do you feel about me doing a piece on Mark Breland about, like, you know, his comeback? And he said, like, you know, talk to him. So, like, you know, I sat down with Mark, blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, I didn't want to do a fluff piece.
Yeah.
You know, a nice, you know, blah, blah, blah piece about, like, oh, like, you know, how great he is. No, fuck that. Let me, like, just, like, you know.
Let's get real.
Into material. Yeah, let's be real, man. And so we had this, you know, me and Mark chatted about, like, losing, winning, you know, how we feel about, like, you know, people in that space that we are when we win or when we lose. And, you know, he gave me gold. And so I, you know, I crafted the material and I sent it to Mike Katz. Yep. And about a week later, it was in the friggin' Daily News. I'm like, holy shit. Now, Mike Katz, once again, like, Mike Katz isn't going to put the thing in the Daily News if it was, like, you know, somewhat, you know, it wasn't great.
Especially being the way he is. I mean, it's got to be right.
Exactly. You know, like, no, dude, like, you know, you you've been in L.A., man. You're like, you know, my acting coach was a guy named Rick Edelstein, right?
Okay.
And Rick Edelstein reminded me of Mike Katz. Not because of the Jewish thing. Not because of the Jewish thing, but, like, you know, because, like, you know, they were unapologetically fucking honest.
Yeah.
You show up for work, you like it, you do good work, you like it, you present good work, and if it's not good work, I'm gonna call you on your bullshit.
That was hard for me at first because I was a little soft and, like, I'd never done that before, and it's just, like, it kind of hurt my feelings. It's like, oh,
of course,
my God.
Yes,
it really toughens you up.
Yes, right? Yeah, but, like, you know, me being an athlete, particularly a boxer, I was used to that kind of criticism.
Yeah.
I didn't like it though. I'm not saying I liked it. But, like, you know, I was used to it. Plus, like, you know, with my father, like, you know, I mean, she liked it. I mean, like, you know, I was used to, like, you know, walking that tightrope, man. Like, you know, but, like, you know, I knew, you know, something, like, you know, it just sparked in my head, man. Like, you know, about, like, you know, people being critical of our work as artists. If I don't believe in you, you can't fucking criticize. You can't criticize me.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I have to believe in you. You know. Yeah. Rick Edelstein, Rick was a beast, man. And I remember, like, you know, at one point, like, you know, Rick and I got into a little thing. Like, you know, men, like, when Rick was, like, you know, like, maybe, like, you know, 30 years or 40 years older than me, but, like, you know, he says something, man, to me, like, in class, man. And I remember, like, you know, I was sitting with my wife, man, at that time. And he passed by the restaurant we were sitting in L.A. And Lisa, like, you know, my wife Lisa said, like, oh, there's Rick. And she had no idea that we had, like, conflict, man. And he saw me. Somehow he saw me, man. And then he, like, you know, so he calls me outside. And he says, like, you know, why didn't you call me back, blah, blah, blah. Because, like, you know, when Rick calls you, you have to fucking call him back. He was like, you know, like, you know, like, you know, he was, like, essentially teaching us in his class about, like, you know, how the industry is.
Yeah.
It wasn't about him. Like, you know, that's an interesting thing. Like, you know, if a producer calls you, if a casting director calls you, you fucking call them back.
Yeah.
He was teaching me that, but, like, you know, I didn't know that at that point, man. And I remember, like, you know, he, like, you know, he's saying to me something. He says something to me, like, you know, that, like, that, like, got under my skin, man. I said, fuck you, man. You don't talk to me like that, man. And, dude, but I remember, like, you know, the look in his eyes, man. The look in his eyes said, wow, man, you don't get it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, you know, I'm like, you know, and I remember, like, you know, feeling fucking so bad in that moment because this guy believed in me. And I'm pushing him away.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, my dude. I mean, like, wow. Yeah.
Did you ever rectify that with him?
Oh, absolutely. Rick.
Okay,
Rick
good.
Was God. Yo, listen, Rick was God to me, man. Rick Edelstein was the guy. Like, you know, I mean, let me do some, like, you know, name dropping and shit if I can.
Yeah.
Rick Edelstein is responsible for discovering Barbara Streisand.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Rick used to go work at some restaurant in Manhattan. I think, like, you know, I forget the name of the restaurant, man, but, like, it was like, you know, some, like, you know, jazzy blah blah restaurant. Mm-hmm. And one afternoon, Rick is there, like, he was bartending, he was like doing some cleaning up, blah blah blah. And Miles David had just did like a concert, or, like, you know, like a performance there the night before.
Wow.
So Rick is cleaning up, and Miles Davis's band is practicing. Miles Davis and his band is practicing, like, you know, for the next, like, you know, for like, you know, the tonight's a gig. And this young white chick walks in. This young white chick walks in, Barbara Streisand, right? Well, who we now know is Barbara Streisand.
Right.
And she goes up to Miles Davis. She walks right past Rick and says, like, you know, oh, hey, like, you know, I'd like to, like, you know, sing a song, like, you know, and maybe audition for you guys. And she walks, like, you know, and she walks to Miles and shit. And she says, hey, Mr. Davis, can I sing a song for you, blah, blah, blah. And
that's pretty ballsy.
Of course, man. And, like, according to Rick, like, you know, Miles was like, you know, get the fuck out of my goddamn face. That was Miles Davis.
Yeah.
He was like, get the fuck out of my goddamn face, right? So, like, you know, Miles went outside. I think he smoked a joint. Goes outside, smokes a joint, blah, blah, blah. And then Rick turns to the band members and says, hey, guys, do me a favor. You know, just, like, you know, give the girl a shot. Give her, like, 5 minutes. And she went up on stage and she, like, you know, grabbed the microphone. The rest is fucking history, bro.
Wow.
So, like, you know, Rick and Barbara Streisand. I remember Rick talking about Barbara Streisand, man. What's that film that Barbara Streisand directed, man? Yentl.
Okay, right. Yeah.
I remember.
In the 80s or something? Or
yes, yes, yes. I remember Rick, man, like, you know, telling us, like, you know, that he and Barbara had a bit of conflict. You know, because, like, you know, yeah, it's just like, it's creativity, blah blah blah. I think I'm right. I think you're wrong, blah blah blah. Like, you know, that guy to spend, like, I spent like 13 years studying under Rick, man. Like, you know,
wow.
Yes, and that person gave me the most valuable education I have ever received, in be it boxing, blah blah blah. Like, you know, great boxing trainers, right?
Yeah,
such as Georgie Benton. They Georgie Benton and another great boxing trainer who I had, who doesn't get his props. His name is Artie Cintron. He was a black Puerto Rican man, and he was my, like, he was the chief guy, like, you know, to develop my craft, man, as an amateur. And he was a truth teller, but, like, you know, he doesn't get the kind of, like, you know, acclaim that, like, you know, these other guys do, because, like, because he wasn't connected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't a big star, but my point is that when I was studying, like, you know, with these great, like, masters of the craft in boxing, they would map out how you get something accomplished, right? Like, how do you throw a left hook? How do you throw a right hand, right? But
okay.
When I got in front of Rick Edelstein, Rick was able to articulate why we throw a left hook, or why we say to your wife as a character, fuck you. Or why we say, like, you know, to
get the meaning behind it.
Exactly.
If you don't, it's not really believable, right?
It's not believable, it's more valuable in life if you know what you are at effect of.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, like, you know, I know I'm fucked up. I'm damaged. But I'm aware of it.
Mm.
And I process it every goddamn day. I'm not trying to make myself better or worse. I'm just trying to, like, stay in the moment.
Sure.
And accept, sure. Like, you know, what I can say. I'm not trying to be better. I don't know what better is.
Well, it seems to me that you've done an incredible job of, through self-awareness and discipline and what have you, just to overcome a lot of what you went through.
My friend, Brian Champ, I wish I could say it was all me. But once again, dude, the thing that allowed me to truly, truly accept myself was the arts, man. My first, not to cut you off, but when I retired from boxing after getting knocked out by Herbie Hyde and putting in that cold 6 day, that 4 day coma, 96 hours, man. After that, I was searching.
Well, in the documentary Losers, you said you felt relieved, because you knew wouldn't be fighting anymore.
Oh, I never wanted to fight in the first place, man. I wanted to be a baseball player.
Oh, yeah. You and me both. Did your soul finally feel free when you started writing and acting?
Oh, dude, it was miraculous, man. The first piece, the first piece I ever, started to, the first piece I ever had published was, the thing about Mark Breland and Emmanuel Stewart. But the piece that really, blew me away and, obviously blew a lot of other people away was a piece that was presented in the Netflix docudrama. I mean, docuseries.
Oh, the one to Burnt Sugar.
Yes.
Surviving a Knockout or the Knockout one.
Right. Anatomy of a Knockout, man.
Yes.
And dude, whoo, boy, let me tell you something, man. Let me tell you, I remember sitting there, I remember writing this piece, right? So the way that whole thing came about, let me just fast forward to a thing. That piece is responsible for getting me the role of Sonny Liston in Ali.
Talk to me about that, because I wanted to ask you about that as well.
Okay.
Obviously.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ron Shelton, who's a biggie, who we all know, the great Ron Shelton. He contacted me one day. I had no idea how he got my phone number. But he's Ron Shelton, so he can do that, right? And he called me, said, Michael, I read your piece, blah, blah, blah. It's fantastic, blah, blah, blah. He said, if you're ever out in L.A., I know some people who are involved in the production of a Muhammad Ali project. If you're ever out here, I'll arrange for you to have an audition. Maybe you can coach Will Smith, blah, 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 or play one of the boxers in the film. I don't know. But if you're ever out here, call me. And dude,
did you fly out there the next day?
No, not the next day. I was in New York, at that time I was in New York, I was still in that phase of post-traumatic trauma, man. Mm. So I was trying to find where the fuck I belonged, Rick Ellerstein would always say, the only way that we can overcome trauma is to replace it with something that we love. Mm. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It made sense to me. Yeah, that's it. So it was about maybe a month and a half. And I had a dear friend, man, when I got back to the East Coast and I was living in Pennsylvania, I met this woman, I had a dear friend who worked at HBO, Artie Curry. He passed away a couple of years ago as well. And Artie and I were would talk boxing, talk life, blah, blah, blah. And one day I was going into his office at HBO. I met this, she wasn't an assistant, but I met this woman who worked at HBO, blah, blah, blah. We became friends. And at some point, she and I started a short film production company together. And we would do a couple of short films, blah, blah, blah. We had no idea what the fuck we were doing. No, I didn't have any idea what we were doing.
It was new and exciting.
Exactly. I love the energy, man, trying to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And about, about maybe about 4 or 5 months after that, I got the call from Ron Shelton. And Ron, he said, like, you know, Mike, I love the piece, blah, blah, blah. And so, okay, so I'll tell you this, like, I need to share this story with you.
Yeah.
Bert Sugar was the editor and like, you know, the top dog of this magazine, Bert Sugar's Fight Game, right?
Yeah.
That Anatomy of a Knockout is published in. I go to, so Bert Sugar gives me a call one day and he says, Michael, how you doing? I'm like, I'm good, Bert. What's up, man? I said, well, Michael. Bert had this like, you know, really like, you know, flamboyant voice, man. Well, Michael, I have an idea. I'm like, what's up, Bert? I'm going to assign you to write a piece that only you can write about. So you're going to assign me a piece that only I can write about. Okay, what's that piece, Bert? You have to write. You're going to write about getting knocked out and knocking someone out. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. Now, the knocking out someone else part, I'm fine with. I was fine with that, right? Obviously. But yeah. The getting knocked out part, I was on the edge, man.
You got to be vulnerable there.
Dude, but like, you know, I wasn't able to, like, you know, embrace that yet. And like, you know, when I tell you, like, you know, in the next like 2 or 3 minutes, it's gonna blow your fucking mind. It's an actual fact. It happened, man. So, you know, a couple of weeks go by. And every like, you know, a couple of weeks, like, you know, Bert would like give me a call and I wouldn't return his phone calls. Because he was like, hey Michael, how you coming along with the piece about, like, you know, getting knocked out? I'm like, God damn, man, like, you know, I'm not trying to fucking expose myself like that, bro. I know I never told him that, but like that's what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah, sure.
So one night, like, you know, I mean, one day I get a phone call, Michael, like, this is, you know what this is Bert Sugar. Meet me at the smaller arena in Madison Square Garden for the finals of the Golden Gloves and blah, 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 blah. Okay, so like, you know, I didn't know that he was, I didn't know why he was inviting me there. So I go there, right? And yeah. I see Bert, like, you know, I see Bert because, like, you know, I know Bert likes to wear like these fancy ass fedoras and shit. Remember that, Bert Sugar?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he was, I recognize the goddamn fedora, right? And I go stand right behind him and he turns around and he looks at me and he gives me like one of those wise guy looks, like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So you're fucking here. Okay, nice. Right. He didn't say that, but like, you know, that's the vibe, right? And like beside him to his right was a short guy. I had no idea who this guy was, man. No fucking idea. But like, you know, I knew who he was, but like, I didn't know that was him, brother.
Okay.
So like, you know, Bert turns around, he looks at me, gives me like, you know, this fucking like look like, oh, this fucking guy. Yeah, you gotta write the fucking piece, son. You gotta write it. And he turns around and then and then I swear on my son, man, this short guy, right, the white cat, comes like maybe fucking in his late 70s and shit. The short guy comes, like he turns around, right, and takes maybe 2 steps towards me and shit and puts his fucking finger in my fucking chest, man. And he says, and he had a stammer, my father stammers. I stammer. My goddamn mother stammers, right? My whole goddamn, well, not my whole family, but like, I stammer. And this guy had a goddamn horrible stammer. And he points his goddamn finger in my choice. Michael, write the fucking piece. I swear to God, right? Write the fucking piece. And the funny thing is, I didn't feel offended by that shit because I know it was coming from, like, you know, a place of encouragement, like, you know, and the guy, I vaguely recognized the fucking guy.
Who was it?
Okay. So it was like, you know, so like, you know, so like, you know, like, you know, let's stay in this moment for a second. So we're like, you know, we're still at the Garden watching the fights, blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, I decided to leave, man. You know, because like, you know, that's some heavy shit. Mm-hmm. Getting like, you know, poked in the fucking chest by some cat, right? It was heavy. And I hop on the train to head back to goddamn Queens, blah, blah, blah. Go back to my spot. And I get a phone call the next morning from Bert. And no. As I was walking out, I bumped into like, you know, the owner of Gleason's Gym in Brooklyn, right?
Okay.
And he said to me, "Mike, you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, just fucking guy just like poked me in the fucking chest." And he said to me, "Like, you know, I mean, you know who that is, right?" No. Bud Schulberg.
Who's Bud Schulberg?
Who's Bud Schulberg?
Yes.
Brian, champion, you have officially lost your goddamn Hollywood card, my friend.
No.
No.
No, don't take it from me.
Who is Bud Schulberg?
I'm feel really like I'm in tune with a lot of stuff. I've never heard that name before.
Okay. Well, like, you know, when
let me Google it right now while we're doing.
No! I drop it on you, man. Okay, Bud Schulberg is responsible for. He was the writer for On the Waterfront.
Oh my!
Yeah, Bud Schulberg was like Hollywood royalty, man.
Wow.
And he won the Academy Award for On the Waterfront, blah blah blah. Like you know when my guy from Gleason's like, you know, told me who he was, I'm like, holy, because like I even back then I was like, you know, a Hollywood fucking head. I was an acting head. Well, like, you know, I was like, you know, interested in acting, mm-hmm, man. Like, mm-hmm. So I knew who Bud Schulberg was. I'm like, holy fuck, Bud Schulberg. And later on, like I found out that Bud had invested in several fighters as professionals back in the days.
Oh wow.
And that's where, like, you know, On the Waterfront came from.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was a fan of the game.
Exactly. So once again, like, you know, so I'm back in my house, bro, and I lock myself in a fucking room and I just like start banging out like, you know, fucking Anatomy of a Knockout.
Wow.
Yeah. And like, you know, I gave myself permission, like, you know, not to give a fuck. You know, and there, at one point, like, you know, I was stuck on, like, you know, well, I wasn't stuck. I was just reluctant. I was mm-hmm. scared. And I said to myself, like, the only way that I'm going to authentically tell this goddamn story or tell, like, you know, fractions of the story is to pull out the goddamn what's that thing called? VCR?
VCR.
Right.
VHS tape.
The only way is to pull out, the only way to authentically tell this goddamn story is to pull out the goddamn VCR from my goddamn closet and watch it and rewatch it and rewatch it. And I pulled out the goddamn VCR, man, of my last fight with Herbie High, where I got fucking smothered and like, you know, fucking decimated and demolished. I watched that fight, bro. And you know what I came away with? Hmm. A feeling of the fucking Phoenix rising.
Wow, did you feel like you kind of freed yourself a little bit in some
way? Bam, exactly. Yes. Wow. Yes, that's right, yep. I mean, it was the most fucking amazing.
It's healing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, but like, you know, see, it's healing. But like, you know, that's the one thing that the community doesn't share with us, man. You have to dig into and be available to, like, you know, directly stare into your failures, bro.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean fucking, like, you know, it's not the end of your goddamn life.
No, and it doesn't mean that it needs to be who you are going forward.
Exactly.
It's just like you just kind of.
It doesn't define you.
No.
That's it. That's
but
it.
Yeah. So yeah. That's awesome. I mean.
Yeah.
So you're starting to feel lighter and lighter doing these different projects, starting to get into acting a little bit. You know, with Ali, it almost seems like that was the perfect opportunity for you to morph from your past into your future, you acting as a boxer. I mean, you know, boxing is your past life, and then acting is your new life.
Yes.
And you got to play a boxer. And so I know, is that the case? I mean, did it feel
No, you're right. I mean, you know, I was just writing something a few minutes ago before you called about acting. I mean, like, dude, every boxer, every goddamn boxer wants to be an actor. Every goddamn actor wants to be a goddamn boxer. Right? You know, I mean, like, Sonny Liston. I was just rereading this autobiography of Sonny Liston. Like, you know, he was like getting work in LA.
Who you played in the movie Ali?
That's right. Who I played the music in the who I had the pleasure or the honor to play in the movie Ali, man, because you know, they during the whole like Ali thing, they had like a substantial big name actor to play him, like Ving Rhames, right? And like, you know, Ving would have just like, you know, like Ving, like, you know, he, you know, he would have done wonderful as Sonny Liston. You know, I think the only thing is that Michael Mann, you know, he wanted authenticity.
Yeah.
With regards to like, you know, the training preparation for Will Smith. And Will Smith was hitting motherfuckers. You know, and Will Smith was with, and Will Smith was getting hit by motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? So Will really learned to fight, my friend, not box, to fight. Mm. Boxing is like, you know, fighting boxing is a result of fighting. He learned to fight. I don't know, like, you know, and I've said this in everything, in every interview, like, you know, I've had about, like, you know, an experience, man. I don't think there's any goddamn actor. You can quote me this. You can quote me on this goddamn thing. There's not an actor who would have put himself in that position to go that deep into the role in the preparation phase like Will Smith did. My man, he sparred with cats who didn't give a fuck about who he was.
Wow.
And would challenge Will, because Michael Mann specifically said, if Will Smith makes a mistake as Muhammad Ali, and you're playing Joe Frazier, or you're playing George Foreman, or you're playing Sonny Liston, you make him pay. That's what Michael Mann indirectly said to, like, you know, the cast of boxers who were all professional champions.
Wow.
Yes. Wow is right. Yes. That's why I love Michael Mann, bro. He's an authentic truth teller. Like, you know, look, if Will gets hurt, I mean, like, you know.
Obviously, you don't want him to get hurt.
You don't want, right. But like, you know, you don't want him to, like, you know, to skate through the production either.
No.
Not like, you know, having the scars or the wounds that Muhammad had and overcame.
Yeah.
Especially the world. Yeah.
Were you, I know that since you had, you know, that injury from your last fight, were you worried about getting hit in the head a little bit?
I'm glad you asked me that, bro. That whole time, that whole moment, my friend, really, honestly, you know, not to get all sentimental, man. I love Muhammad, man. I love what he stood for, what he did in the ring athletically. No one's gonna be able to do what he did, like, in the ring again. And more importantly, like, you know, I love what he did, like, you know, socially. Mm-hmm. You know, he woke people up, and he made, like, you know, and he threatened people. Well, not threatened, but, like, you know, he challenged people in the right spirit, man.
Sure.
When I was offered the role, and like I found that, like, you know, I got Sonny Liston, and I knew that, like, you know, during the training phase of, like, during the phase of preparation, like, you know, I'm going to get hit. I was open to it, and like, and I was like, cool, you know, I was concussed maybe 6 years prior to that, and you know, those kind of conditions neurologically never leave you, but. Real talk, man. I was like, fuck it. If I get hurt, I get hurt, man. Because I'm like, I'm paying homage to Muhammad. And I remember, wow. Like, you know, being on. I remember, like, you know, going running with I remember like Will and I were up in, he took me up to his place in Aspen for the Christmas break. And this, like, I mean, we got to be super duper goddamn competitive, man. So, like, you know, to the, yeah, yeah. And sometimes, like, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, like, you know, I mean, when you're a major fucking star, you know, you can do shit. I wasn't a major fucking star. I'm not a major goddamn star, you know. But like, you know, he always like, you know, like left the back door open, man. Like, you know, if I wanted to say something or do something, like, you know, my man, like, you know, I get it. Because it's all about competition, and he got it. And I remember running, man, and we were sparring at one point in Aspen, man. And he hit me with a shot, and it legitimately hurt me. But like, you know, I'm a boxer, I can play it off. and I have a thought, like, if I fucking die on set, I'm good with that. Yeah.
Well, probably because, I mean, in some ways you felt like you were finally living your life and you could die happy now.
That's right. Exactly. That's right.
Being true to yourself.
That's it. That's it. That's it. Bingo. You got it, man. Yeah.
Wow. You know, it's, I don't know if I cut you off there. Sorry. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned how, like, actors want to be boxers, boxers want to be actors.
Yeah.
Something about being the heavyweight champion, it's almost like royalty in America. I mean, you know, the
list
it's different now, but I mean, right. Like the long list of all the, you know, the heavyweight champs. So in some ways, I mean, that kind of just, do you know, when people see you and meet you, I mean, do they, are they looking at you as that, or are they kind of looking at as the new Michael, or a little bit of both, or, I mean, you know what I mean?
Well, it depends, man. Like, you know, I don't like it. I mean, you know, I'm like from the, I'm not saying this out of arrogance and shit, but like, you know, I'm from the Robert De Niro, like, you know, school of motherfucking, like, you know, not giving a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
yeah.
If you recognize me and see me, like, you know, I respect it, but like, you know, I mean, I don't care about that, like, him, because like, you know, that whole boxing thing, that was yesterday.
Sure. Sure.
That doesn't define me. You know, great, like, you know, I had a great, like, you know, people like, you know, say, well, oh, Mike, like, you know, great fight with Tommy Morrison, my man. It's like, I had a great moment against Tommy Morrison.
Yeah.
You know, it happens, man. You know?
Yeah.
But I try not, you know, I don't try. I do.
No, like, I don't think you do. I know. You're just, you're a very down-to-earth person.
Yeah. I just try to be, you know. And sometimes it goes left, but like, you know, that's part of the thing.
Sure, sure. Mm. We're kind of winding it down. What? Give me a few things that you've learned from acting.
Oh boy. Give you a few things that I've learned from acting.
Yeah.
Oh man, shit.
Or better yet, maybe what are a couple things that are similar between boxing and acting?
Boxing.
The private and public thing, you know, where you're
right. But like, you know, I think one of the primary things with boxing and acting,
mm-hmm.
boxers, like, you know, the subtext in the boxer's punch. You know, I've been cursing the whole goddamn, like, you know, half hour, so like, I'm gonna curse again. When Muhammad Ali throws a jab at George Foreman or Sonny Liston, he's saying fuck you with that left jab, right?
Yeah.
And when Marlon Brando is getting into it with, like, you know, with Blanche DuBois,
mm-hmm.
in Streetcar Named Desire, like, he's like, you know, he's saying fuck you to her, but like, you know, not in the same language, but it's the same language, right?
Sure.
And I learned that, are you familiar with the actress, Anna Deavere Smith?
Anna Deavere Smith?
Anna Deavere Smith.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Well,
I will look her up.
I think you are. Yeah. Look her up. And like, you know, so I trained Anna for like maybe like 15 years. I was in LA, man. And we would have these, this is why, like, I love the fucking arts, man.
Hmm.
I mean, this woman, oh my God, dude. I love this woman.
Mm.
We would go like on these, like, you know, like hour-long jog or workout sessions, blah, blah, blah. And I'm training her, you know, to like, you know, like skip rope, blah, 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 like defend herself. And she's like, you know, we're having a conversation about fucking like everything, man. And she said to me, like, you know, Mike, when a boxer throws a jab, like with conviction, it's essentially saying, fuck you. I'm like, holy shit, yeah. No, because like, you know, like everything is a language, right? Like, yeah. And like, you know, if I'm doing a love scene, blah, 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 there's a certain language there. If I'm like, you know, arguing with like, you know, a character who's playing my father and like, you know, there's a language there. In boxing, there's a subtextual language, man. Mm-hmm. If I'm throwing a fucking jab, like, you know, at Tommy Morrison, or Tommy Morrison is throwing a hook at me, he's saying, fuck you. And I'm saying, fuck you with a jab. Just same language.
I mean, if one's doing it right, acting-wise, I mean, they're both very raw and primal.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
It's coming from within, and it's bringing everything that you had that's led you to that moment. How are you interacting with somebody?
That's right. And it's cathartic, man.
Amen to that. That was so, acting has been so cathartic for me. I cannot.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You know, you know, when I did, like, you know, pushing time, but like, you know, when I did my first play, I played the Gravemaker in Hamlet. Dude,
wow.
Talk about on fire. Like, no. I wasn't like, the character wasn't on fire, but like, I was on fire internally. I'm like, holy shit, I'm playing fucking Shakespeare?
That's amazing. No, it's so awesome. I mean, I just know for me, I mean, we all have a lot of pain and stuff inside of us that wants to come out, and not very many of us are able to do it. And so acting in some ways gives one permission.
Exactly. Precisely. That's it.
You know,
that's it. Like, you know, and like, you know, it like, you know, acting gives one permission, like, you know, on the stage or on set, but like, you know, it also gives one permission to, like, you know, embrace empathy, man, because like, you know, we can't all, like, you know, do what we do.
No.
We can't all do what we love doing, man. Like, you know, and that's a gift. And we have to be conscious of that. And we have to be empathetic for those, like, you know, we don't get the opportunity.
Absolutely. Do you prefer theater or film, TV?
Well, film and TV pays the bills.
Yeah.
But if I have my druthers, man, you know, if I had my druthers, bro, I'd be directing theater in Switzerland.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah. And or acting in theater, like productions in Switzerland. You hear that, Switzerland? I'm coming.
Yeah. No, oh my God. I can't thank you enough. This has been fascinating. And I want to leave us with a quote that you sent to me that I loved. And it's really, I think, appropriate for you know, your experience. It's by Stella Adler, the infamous actor.
Come on, bring it on. Come on.
Life beats down the soul.
Right.
But art reminds us we have one.
God.
And that's you. Yes. That's you Stella in a nutshell, Adler, right? Yeah.
But no, but well, it's me in a nutshell, but like, you know, without the arts, man, I'm not saying that. I can't express that. I can't articulate that without the arts.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, thank you to, like, you know, can I just say, like, you know, a list of thank yous to my people?
Yeah.
Thank Ron Shelton, Tom Hauser, Michael Mann, and definitely Rick Edelstein.
Awesome.
Rick Edelstein. And one more thank you. Carol Gordon.
Carol Gordon. I'm going to be looking up some of these folks.
Okay. Well, Carol Gordon, I'm just like, you know, not to belabor the point, but like, Carol Gordon was my writing coach in LA.
Okay.
Yeah. And she's like, she was married to a Buddy Mora, who was the manager of Robin Williams and a bunch of, like, you know, A-list actors, man, back in the days, man. So yeah, that's my
shout out.
Thanks.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, yeah. I want to shout out you for taking the time. I know you're busy, and but you're such a good person, and you have such a fascinating story.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, I appreciate I have one more shout out.
Yes.
Mickey Dozie is the creator and director and producer of Netflix docuseries.
Oh, of Losers.
Yeah.
Okay. And everybody, please go watch that. It's all the episodes are amazing. And, they're only like a half hour each, but it's very compelling and very inspirational. Yeah. And
gotcha.
Very just, I don't know, it's full of heart and everything. And
The
way they did it was really neat with animation as well.
Yeah. That's Mickey. He's brilliant, man.
No, it's a really, really cool thing.
Yeah. And I'd be remiss. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
I'd be remiss if I didn't big up the Ken Burns team, Sarah Burns, Debbie McMahon, and Ken Burns. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be a part of the Muhammad Ali docuseries.
Mm, that's awesome.
Have you watched that?
I have not.
Brian.
I know. I'm a big fan of Ken Burns' work. So where can I see it? Is it on PBS or?
Yes, on PBS. Yeah, it's streaming. Okay. Well, you may have to, is it still streaming? If you Google Ken Burns, Muhammad Ali docuseries, it'll come up.
All right. No, it's on my list.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Thank you, my friend.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah. And you
this
just
was keep, fun.
No, yeah. And anytime you want to chat, you know where I'm at. And
You got it.
You just keep being you and leaving your positive mark on the world.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson, his latest best-selling book, Habits for Success, and this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. And we love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.